This is the Cascade Hiker Podcast. You're going to find out all the aspects of hiking in our beautiful Pacific Northwest woods and a little bit beyond.
I'm a country boy with a soft side. My heart wanders up north to the hillside. And I've never met anyone quite as beautiful as you.
Check us out over CascadeHikerPodcast.com. That's right, CascadeHikerPodcast.com. That's where you're going to find all the show notes and links right there.
Enigmatic like that of the cosmos, never held your hand.
I want to thank Whiskey Fever for letting me use that awesome track there. That was Tall Grass off their album, Gonna Wake Up This Whole Town. You can find them over at ReverbNation.com/WhiskeyFever. They're from Cedro Woolley, Washington. Go check them out. I'm your host, Rudy Getzik. I'm here to inspire you to get out on the trail. You putting in 2 mile hikes, 5 mile hikes? Are you still on the couch? Come on, let's go on a backpacking trip. I'm going to introduce you to some folks that have done that and a whole lot more. All right, next on the Cascade Hiker Podcast, what in the heck is your name?
Annalise Dowd.
All right, well, last time we talked, you were prepping up for a hike of the Pacific Northwest Trail. Did you hike any part of that trail?
I did. I hiked it this whole summer.
Right on. So you got over to Glacier, and how did you get there?
My mom and my sister drove me and dropped me off. We drove over July 5th and I started on July 7th.
Right on. And I kind of had some idea of what the starting is like. So did they take you right to the trailhead then?
Yes. And then my mom actually ended up shuttling, 3 other hikers up there as well. They are the warrior group that started the same day I did. So I ended up starting with those same guys.
Oh, that's kind of nice.
Yeah.
Good. So did you make some lifelong connections?
I did. Yeah. I met 17 total people on the trail, or 16 total people on the trail.
Oh, just throughout the whole trail?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. And how long did you hike with the warrior group?
I really only hiked with them the first 4 days just through Glacier because we had the same permits. And then we kind of dispersed after that. But I ended up running into them a couple more times in Eureka and then Diana later in Idaho. So, yeah, pretty cool.
That is fun. So how was it compared to how you thought it was going to be? What was some of the main differences?
Oh, so many different things. Just the first day in general, like, I couldn't believe I had actually gotten myself there. It was just so surreal that I was there. I'd gotten to that point, and, like, as they drove away and I was just walking down the trail, then they would be home and I would be still out there. It was just a very, like, strange feeling, and it didn't feel real at all for quite a while, I would say. And I don't know, as much as I had researched, like, Glacier, I think a lot of people I talked to, like, you thought about the park because you had to deal with so much of it with the permits and your campsites and all the other things that go along with that. So when I got to outside of the park, it was totally different because it was all on your own of what you wanted it to be. And it just became very real once I left the park.
Well, you also said that that's where you parted with the warrior crew. So you were on your own as well, right?
Yeah. And then also in the very beginning, I hurt my knee extensively very quickly, like within the first 3 days, to the point of where I could barely stand up. I'm not quite sure what I did, but it still hurts today. I don't even know how I finished the trail even at all, because it would just swell. And I was like holding my kneecap to walk most of the time. So I probably did something really bad to it. But I'm still waiting to go to the doctor to even decide if that's something I want to figure out at this point. But so I kind of like changed my pace and changed what I was going to do from there on. And then it kind of like connected me to another couple that I was with pretty much the rest of the trail. But I think doing that had me slow down a whole lot more and I had to think a whole lot more. And it was just a really awesome experience from there, even though I hurt really bad.
Yeah. Well, I saw some pictures on your blog, you with a knee brace. Is that what?
Yeah.
Did you have that already?
I started with it because my knee hurt like the day we were driving there and I didn't really know why. And I was like panicking, being like, oh my God, I've spent this much time planning for this. How can this just be happening? And then I was like, I'm fine. I can do this. I can keep going, because I was just being stubborn. And so I kept going, and it was coming down Brown Pass. So the last day, or the second to last day in Glacier, that I just, the last 5 miles before we got into Bowman Lake was just the most painful thing. But I was coming down in a thunder and lightning storm. So I just kind of like pushed myself to get to that camp. And then the next morning I hobbled my way all the way out of the park into Polebridge. So,
and that was your first mail drop then?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was fun.
Yeah. Jeez. And so the 4 days that you'd planned, and then you had to get permits, right? So you kind of had to keep going in order to get your spot.
Yeah, I did run into a ranger at the like coming up over Brown Pass, kind of at the bottom before I went up and over. And he was like, I'm not sure if you're going to make it to your camp. Do you want me to call and see if there's one at top of Brown Pass and you can stay up there? And I said, no, I'm going to make it. I'm going to make it. I was also being stubborn. And the weather was so beautiful at that point, I didn't think it was going to change to what it did. But I just kept going, and everyone that I knew at that point was really happy to see that I'd actually made it there. But it was a very rough beginning for me, and also like a very good way to learn that all these people I was hiking with are all very seasoned through hikers and have done many other trails and other things, and I should not worry if I can't keep up with people, and I need to keep my own pace to be successful. And it's still my hike and my journey. And I should have, now backtrack thinking, I should have taken that camp and should have stayed there instead of doing that, instead of pushing myself, because I may have hurt myself less. I'm not really sure, but who knows? I probably was hurt before I even went, but it is what it is.
Yeah. The hike itself is, it can be pretty remote and things. So with your knee hurting, were you worried about, you know, being out in the middle of nowhere and hurting it more?
Yes. So that's when I changed my mileage down to 15 miles a day, which ended up being about perfect. And I honestly think if I do whatever I do next, I might even go that same pace or slower, because I got to experience so many things, I guess. And I felt like I could take the time to photograph what I wanted to photograph and really be in the places that I wanted to be in. So it kind of helped. But there were certain times, like going through the Pasayton, I definitely had moments of, oh my gosh, I haven't seen anybody in 5 days. And then it was just like a hard like thing to motivate. But I had my friends motivating me through my family, my mom, through my GPS, like telling me, you're awesome, you're doing great, and you're going to make it through everything. So it was, I had so much support and so much encouragement that I knew what to do at that point to take my time to make the pace happen and to make it my journey to get to each spot. So,
yeah. So you had the, what type of, GPS did you have then?
I had the Garmin inReach Explorer. So it actually was really helpful for some certain areas between having the wider set of maps. So if I wanted, there was a couple places where I knew I wasn't going to make it over certain things, so I would take an alternate or create my own kind of alternate for a slow, like a lower elevation, so I could zoom out, because the Avenza maps only have the trail. So if you're off the map, then you're off the map. So I kind of used like a combination of those for figuring out places, and then you can have satellite text messages through there too, so it was very helpful
and kept you from being too lonely out there.
Yeah. It was also just nice to get encouraging messages, even if I didn't always respond, but I got to at least tell my mom and my friends and stuff every day. I would check in and say, I'm leaving from here, or I'm stopping here and turning everything off. So they knew that I was okay.
Yeah. And so what, I'm just kind of looking through your pictures right now on your blog, and that's hikesfordad.com. And so, yeah, you kind of figured out real quick that it was hard to run a blog from the trail, it looks like.
Yeah, definitely very quick. And there was just very little service in every town and very little like ability to get to Wi-Fi, at least for me. So I just kind of quickly became something, I'm going to post some pictures to Facebook because that's all that I can really get done. And I'll post to Instagram if I can. And then I decided what I'm going to do now that I'm back is write them kind of going backwards. And I've been reading through my journals. I wrote every single day on the trail. So I have that to kind of go back and look at and write. And I kind of want to write now that I'm thinking backwards on it, I guess, blog, because that was very hard.
Yeah,
I know other people did it, but I just, it was hard for me. So took on too much than I thought I could take on, I guess.
Well, that's okay. I mean, that's, you know, especially with the injury on top of it all.
Mm-hmm.
So what about, did you get a trail name?
I did. Thumbelina, which is kind of just turned down into like thumbs or thumbles. But I never actually had to stick my thumb out to hitch a ride. People would just be like, are you a PNT hiker? Do you need a ride? And I'd be like, yes, I do. Thank you. And Thumbelina is a really happy, cheery fairy. And I was just happy the entire time. The two people I hiked with the most is Tickled Pink and Dust Bunny. And they were like, you are the most refreshingly, like, genuinely happy person we've ever met on a trail. We have to come up with some kind of name for you. And I was like, okay. So that's where it came from. And even when I hurt, I was still happy and so thankful to be out there the entire time. So it was just like I would find the best in every situation.
Yeah, and so I didn't realize that the trail towns were that good. So people were literally just coming up to you and asking you if you needed a ride.
Yeah, for the most part, it was pretty easy.
Wow. And then you talked about the Pasaten area. Now, you said you'd slowed down to about 15 miles a day. So then how much poundage and food did you start that section with?
Oh, it took me 11 days to get through the Pasaten. And I didn't actually weigh my food bag, but one of my best friends, she came and met me in Oroville and brought me my box. And she was just dying laughing at how heavy my food bag was. She's like, I can't even carry that. And it was pretty funny. It was a lot. But halfway through the Pasaten, I actually lost my appetite and wasn't eating. And I was giving away food to the PCT hikers, actually, at a certain point. And I lost a lot of energy and it was very hard for me. And I don't know if it was just between the extreme heat that was going on through there and the smoke. And then one night it froze over there. So I'm not sure if it was just a combination of all that, plus I hurt really bad, but it was just a very weird thing. I lost my appetite, and so I was still carrying quite a bit of food towards the end. I gave away more food even at Ross Lake to another guy, so it was pretty funny, but not good at the same time.
Did it
was
a
lot,
a drop
though.
There?
I did. So coming out of Ross Lake, I actually had my mom meet me there. I could barely stand up at that point. It was actually really bad. So I did miss the next section, because there was no way. I called Ted and I talked to him, about kind of what some options were. I looked at the maps, looked at the terrain. I was holding my kneecap together just to even stand up at that point. So we weren't sure if I needed to take enough time off to be able to keep going. So I did miss that next, North Cascade section just because the elevation and I needed that time to be able to continue to walk. And I figured that was a part that I could easily come back and do. It's right in my backyard. And I've done a lot of it anyway, but just not all the way continuously through. So that is one part I'd like to go back and just finish. But so that's what
that's
I did
cool.
there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, yeah. Well, especially with you know, the precautions of being injured. And what were you doing on the trail to, you know, kind of help yourself keep going and motivate yourself to kind of work through the pain or whatever?
Really, it was just how beautiful everything was and the fact that I'd planned this. And if I'd broken a bone or something, I definitely would have taken that time. But at the same time, I'm really stubborn when it comes to like an injury. And it's probably bad. And I've done this to myself before where I'm like, oh, it's fine. You'll be okay. And then I end up hurting myself worse. But at this point, like, I knew if I made the right decisions and I could slow down my mileage, if I rested the way I needed to rest, and I was taking like a ton of turmeric, which is a natural anti-inflammatory, and a bunch of other just things to be able to kind of make myself continue to keep going. I elevated my leg every night, would stop sooner than other people would just so that I could get to Cape Alava. And that was kind of my mom and I, we talked about the whole time, like, what do we need to do for me to be able to finish to get to that ending point? That's the main goal, is how far can I go before I'm too hurt? And so that's what I did to get to the end.
Yeah, well, that's good that you were able to, you know, come up with those ideas. What about like your footwear, your socks? Did you change any of that, or did you need to? I mean, I was reading your blog a little bit there. But.
Well, I lost my two big toenails, and I wore the same pair of shoes from mile 133, so from Eureka, all the way to the end. And all I did was switch out the size. There was nothing wrong with the first pair, but they were a little. I tested them out before, and they were, I thought, big enough. But I think they just never dried out between all the water crossings and stuff through Glacier, and they were wet, and my toes just got soaked, and they just never dried. So I think that's where that kind of came from. And then I got the second pair, which was just another half size bigger. So I ended up wearing a 10, and I usually wear 8.5, and I wore those all the way to the end. I ripped a hole in them at mile, 11:20 in the top on a route, and I didn't even bother to duct tape them up. I was like, nope, these are gonna make it. We're going all the way to the end. On the second to last day, my shoelace ripped, and I still just kept going. So I wore those, and they're La Sportivas. I wore them from 133 to the very end, and they made it, and they were great. And I wore just darn tough socks. I had three pairs that I just kind of rotated through. I did switch out first, second set of three in Oroville. So halfway, I switched out, and I had another set, clean set of three. So, yeah, that's all I did for socks.
Right on. Well, hey, just kind of go back one sec. You had mentioned in the previous question, you brought up Ted, and I just wanted to remind people that Annalise was on episode 60, Hikes for Dad episode, and she talked a lot about Ted. And can you remind us, who he is and what kind of role he played?
Yeah, so Ted Hitzroth is one of the first people to hike the trail in that same group. He hiked it in 1983 with Ron Strickland, and he created all those original maps for the trail. And he's just a very good family friend of ours, and he's known me my whole life. So I had really good experience being able to spend that time with him, learning and going over everything from the trail. And lots of stuff was different, and then lots of stuff was the same. But it was definitely a very fun, exciting thing for him. Every town I would talk to him, and he'd want to know what was different or what was the trail conditions like or anything like that. So Ted, pretty awesome guy.
Yeah, and did you have another family member? Jeff Kish reminded me that that helped with the original guidebook.
Yeah, my grandpa was the publisher of the original guidebook.
Right on. Well, that's a huge tie-in.
Yeah, partially why I had to finish and had to get to the end, too, was just myself telling myself, you put all this into it, you got to do it.
Hey, I've got a way to support the show today. That is just clicking a few things on my website. So if you go to the show notes of the episode, check out mytrailcompany.com. If you like GoLight, then this is the original owner of GoLight. It took it all back, has original products and stuff. And you just click through my link there, and I get a little credit for that. Also, REI, if you shop REI online, then go to my show notes, click through the REI.com logo, and it's the same website. You're just giving me a little bit of kickback. And the same with Amazon. If you shop Amazon at all and you want to support the show, pretty easy. Just click through my website, and you're going to get the same exact Amazon. It's just going to give me a little kickback as well. One of the best ways to support the show, of course, is patreon.com/CascadeHikerPodcast. And that's joining me. That's my little spot there. And, you pledge $1 or $5 a month. That all goes right back to the show. So you're supporting the show, you're supporting me, and I appreciate you as a listener. Now back to the episode.
The trail, it's changed a lot since Ted hiked. And since the first guidebook, and Jeff Kish brings this up, and he wants to know, what surprised you the most then, given your background to the trail?
It's hard to say because there were parts that I kind of expected. I guess the Pasayton and some of that I thought would be harder. And only the part that was so hard was from the bottom of Bunker Hill to Soda Creek, which is all the blowdowns, which unfortunately that area just burned as well. But that area, just the navigating through that, it wasn't necessarily navigating as much as just the blowdown area was so hard. Two of the people I met, Paul and Josh, they counted 158 blowdowns in the last half mile. I don't even want to know how many there were in the whole, like, 6 miles that there were. So it was pretty hard just climbing over them. That was really difficult. And I think it was all just in my head. I guess even Glacier, I thought, was going to be harder. I really convinced myself that everything was going to be harder than it was. And even when I look back at it, I was like, oh, okay, that was really tough, but I could easily do that again. Or I know I could have gone maybe further the next time. And I thought some of, like, the road walking was definitely harder, and I did not anticipate that to be as much as it was, even though I knew it was there. I just didn't know how much it was going to affect me mentally. And I think the Ruby Ridge area was somewhere Ted really wanted to know what that was going to be like, because when he hiked it, it was in horrible condition. And it was great when I was there. It was nice, wide, beautiful trail. And that's just outside of, or right when you enter Idaho, going down into Feist Creek. And then another area was Thirsty Mountain that he really wanted to know about and what that was like. And I still want to know why they decided to go, like, nice, wide, beautiful trail, and then turn right to, like, no trail, and then back to nice, beautiful trail. So some of that was similar to when he hiked it, and some of it was in great condition from when I hiked it.
So it was kind of like a checkerboard in that area of, like, yeah, some good trails, some not?
Yeah, it was really interesting. Like, I don't know. And then sometimes, too, like, the current guidebook would say, like, it's like this, and it would be in better condition. Like, going up Buzzard Mountain, they said it was going to be in really bad condition from mountain bikes being used and dirt bikes all up through there. But I didn't find that it was in bad condition at all, other than that a sign was knocked down. But it was actually in really good condition. And the backside of it was all brand new, having, like, almost, like, well, cement pavers kind of down and around the bottom of it, just for the dirt bikers, so it's meant for them more. But the trail was in good condition.
Nice.
Yeah.
Being that the PNT goes through some areas where most travelers wouldn't go. I mean, you know, there's parts of northern Idaho and northern Washington up in that area just before the Pusaten. What did you learn anything about, you know, the areas as you were hiking?
I didn't know Loomis National Forest or State Forest existed at all. And that was actually a really, like, it was really dusty, but the trail, even though it was burned, the trail was in pretty good condition. It was wide. There was just cows everywhere through there. I was like, please move off the trail, cow. Thank
wow.
you. Please go. And they have built these nice new wide bridges that cross through there, and it's perfect for them to just stand on the middle of them. So that was fun. Slowed me down a little bit through there. But I feel like that was one of the only places I hadn't really, like, ever heard of, I guess, because I'd also looked into the trail so much before. I kind of had an idea of the name of, and I've looked up all these places. So that was the only place I hadn't really heard of or known that it existed or how it connected into the Pusaten, but it was still beautiful.
Yeah, I recently drove a lot of that area over there. This summer, I took my girls on a little trip, and we went to Republic, and then we went over, you know, near the Selkirks, and just,
mm-hmm.
I was just, I personally, from the car with my with my young kids, you know, I was like, wow, I didn't even know there was a pass over here. Like, you know, there's, like, signs saying to chain up and stuff, and I was like, man, there's some stuff going on over here I didn't even know about.
Yeah. Even Priest Lake, I'd never been there. I'd heard about it, but I'd never been there. And if all the people weren't there with their boats, it was just the most incredible, beautiful place. But there was just so many people and so many boats. I was also there on a weekend, and I didn't know it was such a popular boating place, but it was still incredibly beautiful. I'd go back there again, too.
Nice. And, you know, kind of, like, talk about, like, some of the stuff we talked about in your first interview in episode 60, Was there a point on the trail where you just really kind of had, you know, like some inner thought time and, you know, you're really thinking about your dad?
So many times. I tried to make like spreading ashes in memorable places, and sometimes they were just places. But then sometimes I would just be walking and certain areas would just remind me of stuff. And I don't know if I said this before, I couldn't say this before on the last podcast, but my grandma also passed away right before I left. So I took a little bit of her ashes as well. So I was able to spread both of them a little bit across the trail. But there were just some moments where I'd be like, this is so incredibly beautiful, and I wish that he was here to walk this with me, or this is something he would be taking pictures of and we would be hanging out here all day because this place is incredible. Or this is a place that he'd be like, why are we walking on this? Like, let's turn around, or let's skip this road, or let's do that, because he's just for the beauty more than the road walking. So there were definitely moments where I would just kind of sit and have a moment to myself, or sometimes I'd find myself crying to myself, thinking about it and wishing it was there. Or even about my grandma, I'd be like, this is like, she would be the one loving every single picture that I took and missing the fact that she wouldn't be there when I got home to be able to tell me about them or be so excited to talk about all of them was also just really hard. But thankful that I have the memories of the things that they do have, or that they gave me, to be able to push through all of those experiences.
I like the way you put that. And so did you hike any of it with your mom? Does she come out at all? I know she likes to get in the outdoors too, right?
Yeah. So we had the intention of her hiking the last 100 miles with me. I didn't realize what the terrain was that I had picked for her. I thought it would be a little bit easier for her with her she has two new knees. So she ended up hiking from about Hurricane Ridge to Appleton Pass, and crossing over there with me. And then we ended up having to hike out from there. And then I hiked the last part by myself. But she did awesome in the part that we did do. And she got to meet two other PNT hikers that were up there. And I was the second person that they'd met on the whole trail. Well, that was kind of cool too.
Wow. Isn't that crazy? They can hike that far. Who was it?
It was Snorkel and I think, Thrasher. She's a speed record holder, I think, on the AT, or when they were listing off all of the hikes that they had done, I was like, okay, you've done a lot. That's, I don't even know all the things you're listing. So they've done a lot. They were super, super nice though.
Right on. And they hiked most of the trail and met you. You said you were the second person they met?
Yeah, the other person they met was Wanderer, which I don't know. They said they met him back in Montana, so I don't know how long ago that was, and I haven't seen anything about him. I don't know.
Crazy. Man. Well, so, this was like a summer-long, awesome event for you. I mean, just lifelong memories and family involved, so many things going on. So what, is there something else beyond this for you?
Yeah, I mean, I've been home a little over 3 weeks now, and I'm just kind of like thinking about all these different things and having so many different ideas in my head. And it's like, I'm very attached to this trail, and I was starting to kind of look at other things, and I keep being like, I feel like I'm betraying the PNT in some way by wanting to do something else, just because I've been so enthralled in this for so long. But I think whatever I do next, it will either not be as long, or I'll break something up into smaller chunks. Like I might do all of Washington or Oregon or parts for the PCT, or I really want to do the Colorado Trail. I really want to do the whole CDT, but I just feel like I don't want to take all of that time to do it end to end for some reason. I miss being at home with my family and the amount of work that it was really for them to also do for me. I mean, right. My mom had to mail every single one of my boxes and change things up in those boxes if I wanted them changed up. She was in charge of making sure that I had everything that I needed. So it was just as much work for her at home to kind of keep everything going And my sister, who took care of my dogs and all of the things that she needed to take care of for me at home. So if I did something else, I don't know. I also just want to be able to experience it and not just hike straight through, but every place on the PNT I could have explored longer and more. And I wanted to explore longer and more. And it was hard to keep going. Like, I even wrote in my journal that every lunch spot is incredible. And I wish I could just stop here and then continue to keep going and then make every day like a 10-mile day so I could find more places to explore out there. But it's hard when you have to keep going to the next spot. So it's hard to say. I really am not sure what I want to do next. At this point, I know I need to fix my knee before I do anything else so that I can do something else. I'm also just really looking forward to, like, higher mountains, bigger views, and that's kind of what's drawing me to Colorado, I guess, is just that just sounds beautiful. And I also just want to continue to hike as many long things as I can.
Well, and then also, you know, when you're talking about the 10 miles a day, you know, you could do that on the section that you still need to, you know, go back and take care of. So that that gives you that option.
That's what I was thinking of, too. I want to be able to take that time and just explore, because it was so hard sometimes to just know you have to keep going. So, yeah.
Right on. You also had talked about, you know, in kind of like your pursuit to hikes for Dad, you know, that you wanted to do a lot of the same hikes that he had done. And are there still some of those that you want to do?
So many. That's one thing I started to look at when I got home, too. I was thinking about it a lot out on the trail, is the mountaineers. I want to be able to climb. I do want to be able to climb Rainier and Adams. And my dad has climbed Mount Olympus, so that was so awesome to be able to see that from the Olympics. And also just even in the Pasayton, I could see every range that he's climbed. Like, that was incredible to be up there and be like, oh, he's climbed to the top of every single one of those peaks. So that's something I want to be able to do. It's just a lot of money for them, but it's also a lot of, like, time invested into it. So I want to make sure that I have the right time and I'm not invested into too many other things first before I kind of take that on, and that I'm healthy to be able to do it and that I don't put into it and that my knee can't handle it. So, and I also want to make sure I'm doing, like, the routes that he would have done, because he didn't always pick the most popular one. He would pick, like, kind of the route less traveled, which is a lot of why I did the PNT to begin with. I love that kind of aspect. I don't like being on the highly populated or heavily traveled trails.
Right on. Well, how do people, you know, find you on the internet? I mean, you got hikesfordad.com, and then what's your Instagram?
My Instagram is adowd83, which I'm continuing to post, like, every day on from the trail. Which is, I don't know, maybe overload at this point, but there's so many. I took like 4,000 pictures.
Keep them coming. That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Well, do you have anything to say before we head out here?
No, just the most incredible experience. I met the most incredible people on the trail. And I will not forget any of it. And it was all just truly an incredible experience.
Well, Annalise, thanks so much for coming on the Cascade Hiker Podcast again.
Thanks.
All right, that's the show. Thanks so much for tuning in. Don't forget to join the Patreon page. Find me at patreon.com/Cascade Hiker Podcast. Also, hit me up with an email, Rudy@CascadeHikerPodcast.com. Find me on Facebook. My Facebook page is Cascade Hiker Podcast. Twitter, find me at @in_CascadeHiking. And I'm Cascade Hiker Podcast on Instagram. One more time, thanks to Whiskey Fever for letting me use that awesome track there. Go find them at reverbnation.com/whiskeyfever. Hey, see you next week.
You were sweet like honey on a heartbeat. You were fine like wine in the sunshine. I could feel you coming on strong. Could never be wrong. Could never be wrong. See her laying down in the tall grass, playing mandolin in a white dress. So come running when I hear that song. It could never be wrong, it could never be wrong. Where you wanna run, baby, I'll run too. I would leave this world for a beautiful girl if I could just find you.